Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to Slam Fire Radio for episode 93, January the 30th, and I'm one of your hosts, Owen Flewelling.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy.
I'm the third wheel.
We almost nailed that, I think.
We got that in the right order and everything.
Yeah.
Except Trevor didn't say his name.
Nobody cares Trevor. About his name.
Everybody knows who Trevor is.
There you go.
Who?
Ron for a latte.
We're there. Yep.
Excellent. So how is everybody?
Good.
Who wants to start off? Who did something with guns this week?
Trevor did.
Trevor did? Trevor, why don't you start?
Unlike me to do stuff with guns, but I'll see if I can. I'll wing it. How's that?
Yeah, wing it.
All right. It was just a excellent, productive week in the reloading room because of two gifts from the snow gods. Matthew, you didn't get two.
I got one gift, except that I was scheduled to have that day off anyway, so it really didn't matter to me at all.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So, well, and one of my snow days was, I had to go in, but there was no classes that day. But anyway.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I started off before the week, actually, on the weekend, loading up some test rounds to bring out to your place, Matthew, to use on your chronograph. I'm trying two new.
You're going to shoot my chronograph?
Yes.
I'd prefer it if you shot through it.
So it's caliber for chronograph. What's the best load for that?
50 Beowulf. It'll take him out every time.
Is it? Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, two different powders that I've not tried before, and they're usually used for open for 9mm major loads. So I'm just following the published recipes on Hodgkin's website and. Well, Hodgkin, I didn't know this, but they're doing all of the reloading data for Winchester as well. If you go to Winchester website and look for reloading data, it refers you back to Hodgkin. So I don't know if they've got some partnership going there or whatever. But if you're looking for loaded data, the Hodgkin website is so well laid out. It's like three steps. Pick your bullet or pick your caliber, pick your projectile weight, pick your powder. Boom. Click calculate. And it gives you the minimum and maximum charge for that bullet weight in that caliber with that powder that you selected.
That's cool.
It's very, very straightforward, very easy. It's quick and you don't have to go searching through forums. So check that out if you're a reloader, if you haven't already caught onto that yet, the Hodgkin website. And then Mark Drew came over and he came over on the first snow day, Tuesday, and we loaded 1,000 rounds of 9mm. And then he came back the next day and we loaded another 1,000. We were like a factory. I stood in front of the press and I literally I stopped to eat a sandwich. That was it. I just kept cranking the handle and he just kept filling everything that needed to be filled.
Nice.
Case gauging as we went, filling the primer tubes, filling the machine, filling the bullets, filling the brass. And we worked through it pretty quick. So
it doesn't take long, especially you get two people, somebody filling the, especially that primer tube, because it's kind of a pain to do. You get someone ready to go with that and you can really go fast. I've done that. We did, 500-600 rounds in an evening with a friend of mine here.
For a joke, yeah. Like when before I had the case feeder and Muffin would stand there and keep the pipe full, it never jammed because he always got the cases in the right way and there was never a jam in the funnel at the top of the case feeder. And he actually was so coordinated that he could fill the primer tube in the machine while I was reloading.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, we had it down. We were a fine oiled machine there for a while. So, and then I did the most boring part of reloading, and that's pull all the bullets that you've either found on the range or mistakes you made while reloading, or like a primer went in sideways, you need to take it apart and get the bullet, reuse the bullet, reuse the powder, stuff like that. I pulled bullets for an hour straight.
Did you break your hammer again?
No, I got a new little setup going on. The vise at the end of my workbench, it's got a little square flat steel area, and I just gently tap on that and the bullets come out, no sweat, and the hammer held up. So
nice.
About 2 years worth of bullets picked up. Like when we pick brass off for SummerSlam, you'd be amazed at how many loaded pieces of ammunition you pick up. And sometimes you shoot it, which you're not supposed to. And I did that once. It was so funny because every once in a while I hit a 9mm major load through my Glock. So, and I decided to pull the rest. And then I loaded up some 223 rounds for my Thompson Center. I'll wait for the spring to do these. Toby sent me two boxes of projectiles like 2 years ago. He sent me some nice Nosler 40 grain ballistic tip bullets and some 50 grain spear bullets. And these, they're called Spear TNT. They're a kind of like the Winchester White Box 45 grain jacketed hollow point. They're kind of the same type of bullet as that. There's no ballistic tip. There's no exposed lead. It's just they bring the copper plating up to a little hollow point. And they're some of the nicest projectiles. I mean, I always love spear projectiles whenever I can get them for my 40. I've never seen them for 9, but I've seen the 9 spear ammunition, the law enforcement stuff that the RCMP train with. And if you can ever, doesn't matter what caliber, if you reload and you get your hand on spear bullets, do it. Quality is amazing. And then I got some 40 grain Hornady. So I loaded some test loads at different powder charges with 40 grain Hornady, 40 grain Nosler, and 50 grain spear. And, I'll wait till the spring to get out. I'm not going to chronograph them. I just want to see how they group and then I'll pick the powder charge based on the best group. Those Nosler bullets and the spear bullets I probably won't see again. But the Hornady ones, I can usually actually pick those up at the local Canadian Tire, believe it or not. So I'm hoping that ends up being an accurate load. I'm not talking Axis accurate. I'm not talking $350 rifle accurate. I'm talking $800 accurate, right? So twice the group size of a Axis, unfortunately. No problem. All the loads that I made for that rifle so far have been with 55 grain bullets, and it's not going to happen. It's got a 1 in 12 grain twist, so it doesn't like a heavy projectile. Ironically, I actually don't know if this is irony or not, but it sounds funny to say ironically, so I will. The best group that I've gotten out of a 55 grain projectile with that rifle was when I used a max compressed load of 27.5 grains. That was the tightest group I had, which was about 1.5 inches. And really it's not, maybe it was a bit more than 1.5 inches because for some reason I didn't find it acceptable, but if, you know, 1.5 inches to 1.75 inches with that bullet, 27.5 grains, that would be a pretty lethal round. You know, 55 grains, full charge. I should actually chronograph that and see what I'm getting. It's got to be over 3,000, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's chronograph it. Why not?
Yeah.
We can do this.
I did some 308 and 30-06 test loads as well. And some of them I just loaded up for the grand. I'm going to get that gas plug that Spencer the Whale recommended. And then I can use anything, but I had some 150 grain soft point projectiles. So I loaded them up with the minimum powder charge with H335. So they should be safe for the grand. I know they're going to be safe with the grand because I'm only going to shoot the grand with that aftermarket gas plug. So no matter what I put through it, we'll be safe. So, and then finally tonight, just before we recorded, I went to an impromptu, unexpected executive meeting of the Rescue Gun Club. I had left the executive at the last AGM, but it looks like I may be back on the executive. I had one of the members quit, resign, whatever, which has opened up a position on the executive. So, if the position becomes available, then I will volunteer for it if nobody else wants to run, and I'll be back on the executive.
Yay!
And
you needed more stuff to do, right?
Yeah, well, speaking of more stuff to do, during the executive meeting, I had a call in to Sean Bevins from the NFA. We're going to be starting a NFA range safety officer certification program. So they're going to, I forget the gentleman's name, it's Peter somebody, he's from Nova Scotia. He's the one that, he's like a master facilitator. He trains the local facilitators and then they go out and train new range safety officers. Mm-hmm. So this will be a course to replace the one that you and I took, Matthew.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it'll be me in the north and then Andrew Burr in the south, I believe, is also going to get certified in teaching it. And it's, you know, all the materials are ready to go. The certificates are ready to go. The swag is ready to go. The price structure has been determined. We just got to get me trained so I can start teaching those classes.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah. And, it's not enough coming events, but I'll throw it out there now. If anybody listening is in New Brunswick and wants to, if you have 6 match points and would like to take an IPSC range officer class, I'm teaching one in Dalhousie on the 7th and 8th of March. So get in touch with me through Facebook or the show or trevorferlotta@gmail.com if you'd like to register for that. So, Owen, if you've got anybody down there that...
Yep, I'll pass it along.
Okay, cool. All right. How about, well, why don't we go back to you, Owen. What did you do?
Did a little bit this week. I've got something sitting on my desk here that's been here for a few weeks. I keep forgetting to mention it. What I was sorting through brass a few weeks ago, I came across a rather interesting casing, and I'm not sure how it got to be the way it is. It's a 9mm casing. That's the head stamp. The primer strike on it is offset, and the top of the gauge, probably the top of the case, probably about the first half, is bulged out significantly.
Sounds like somebody shot that through a 40.
Wouldn't
it just drop? If you put that in your gun and it somehow loaded it, wouldn't it just drop right through your gun? Through the
no, nope.
I've shot 40 in my 45. Like I had Camille and Muffin, so Shake and Bake were loading my Glock 21 mags, and they threw a 40 in there because they thought it would be funny. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. It hit the
because they thought it would be funny. That's the best reason ever. Really,
exactly.
why follow, you know, proper safety protocol with handguns and firearms? Because it could be funny.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, it fired, and the bullet rattled its way down the barrel, and the case swelled up to take up the space in the chamber.
Yeah, interesting. I figured that's the only explanation I'd come up with. But
what about firing out a battery?
Possibly, but you would think that would swell the whole casing.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Anyway, yeah.
It
probably was a 9. It got shot through 40. Anyway, kind of interesting. I'm on the search this week for harder primers. I see someone left me a note here in the show notes.
Pistol or rifle?
Pistol, large pistol.
Yeah, Mo was carrying Dominion Canada primers, and he stopped carrying them because we were complaining they were too hard.
Okay.
And the other ones that are hard, like wear down the striker on your Glock hard, are the Sailor and Billet.
Okay.
Which I have lots of. If you want to trade me for some Federal, that'd be great.
I don't have any Federal. These are large pistol?
No.
No.
Oh, you need large pistol. Oh, you need large pistol.
Yeah.
Why harder?
Well, this is, I don't talk about my antique a lot, but this is for my antique, and I found that it was when it's fully loaded, the first couple shots are fine, but then the primers are getting hit so hard they're wrinkling up from the strike, and then the tolerances are so close. Imagine a 130-year-old gun having tolerances this close where you can't rotate the cylinder on the last three shots except by hand because the primers are rubbing.
I would check with Canada Ammo or Budget Shooter Supply. Look for Dominion primers first, and then Sailor and Billet, and then Winchester.
That's what I'm using it, is Winchester.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were into something like a Federal or a CCI.
No. Mm. I thought Federal was hard, but...
No, Federal is the softest primer.
They're the softer ones. Okay.
Yeah, Lee doesn't want you to use Federal in their loading, in their primer feed systems. They don't even want you to use it in their primer feed system on a single stage press. When I put the Jerry Mikulik Bangs Inc. spring kit in my revolver, it said, from now on, you're going to use Federal. Otherwise, you're not going to get good primer hits, or you're going to get weak primer strikes if you use something else. So.
Okay, well, I'll look for those and see what I can come up with. I just want to get a few just to try it and see if it makes a difference.
Check with Mo, see if he has any left over. He may even have some large pistol. Who knows?
Yeah.
He was selling them just last summer.
Okay. Yeah, I'll drop him. I got to send him a message anyway. So I'll about something else. So I'll ask him. Maybe he has some kicking around. I got some new. This is kind of business related, but I got some new holsters. Some G code holsters in today.
Which one?
And,
I should know this, but I don't. But
you should, yes.
It's okay. Well, you can tell me.
I had that an STI holster I brought in for somebody, but then I got these. They built these in conjunction with Haley Strategic, so Haley Strategic and G Code got together, and they built these in waistband all Kydex holsters, and I was a little skeptical because all Kydex, you know, I'm thinking, they're going to be bulky. They're going to be, but I had a customer asking for them. So I said, well, why not? Just, like, bring a couple in, see what they're like. And I really like them. And I tried
is
them.
The OSH on?
Yes. Yeah, the OSH, they're just straight in. There's some slight adjustment up and down, not a lot, but there's some slight adjustment up and down as far as height. And I don't know, you might be able to put a bit of a cant on it, but not much. But these would work excellent for an appendix-style carry. And I've never, theoretically, never been a fan of appendix carry. I look at it and go, well, I could never do that. It just doesn't look comfortable. It looks awkward. But I got this holster this afternoon, and I put it on, and I could not get over how comfortable it could be in the right situation. I wouldn't want to put it on and drive around for 4 hours. But if you just had to, you know, putting it on, driving to the mall, and this is theoretical, of course, in Canada, if we could carry it. But for people who you know, like that idea of having a setup for that, I could see if you were doing a lot of standing or walking around, very ideal, very fast, very, very fast, very concealable because it's on your front. You don't have to worry about it sticking out if you bend over, things like that. It just seems much easier to conceal on the front just because the way, you know, the human body bends and moves. We tend to bend forward as opposed to, you know, we never bend back where it could print or something.
I've always liked the idea of appendix carry, especially with a shorter gun. You don't want a super long gun because as you bend over, it digs into your thigh.
Exactly.
But with a shorter gun and riding a little bit high on your belt, I always thought appendix carry would be fantastic because, like you said, when you bend over, you would never print. It's always on your front. So you've got a loose-fitting shirt or a jacket or something, always covering it up. Quick to get at, too. You don't have to move so much garments out of the way. You just kind of flick your shirt to the side, and there's your gun right there at your hand.
Think about it. It's kind of where the open guys put their...
It's exactly where the open guys put their guns. Well, not exactly, but yeah.
Yes, yeah. And
they put them there because it's readily accessible. It's like fast. Really accessible, right?
So. Nice, solid. They're plastic clips, which I was a little bit skeptical of, but they seem
magazines.
To be well.
They're called magazines.
They seem to have really good retention as far as, you know, solidly clipping over a belt. And my belt, I carry, you know, I have an Aries Gear belt. It's a thick, heavy belt. But there's lots of room for these to clip over underneath snugly. They just have like two clips.
The universal belt?
Yeah. Oh. They're not metal. They're plastic. They're like a proprietary clip. They don't look anything like, you know, like the Mamba. They don't look like those ones. But they were made in such a way that you could, I guess, tuck this in some. If you had to, you know, if you want to wear a t-shirt and tuck it in over top, some, I don't know how why you'd ever do that, but no, it's good. It's,
do you have any in stock for Glock?
I have, well, yeah, if I don't buy one, I have two here for Glock and two here for Smith & Wesson's, I believe.
Oh, that's going to cost me money. Oh, I actually, you know what? I have Luke Giroux brought me in an LHS for my M&P, but he has it because the fit was a little loose. So reminder, Luke, you're working on my holster right now. But I can definitely go for one for the Glock. And you know what else? They make them for revolvers. And I don't have a kind of cool holster for my revolver.
The other thing I have, now I've got a bunch of, I got some pistols, like single mag pistol mag holders and stuff. The other thing I got that was kind of cool is a nylon. It's nylon. It doesn't look quite as fancy and as nice. I haven't tried it yet. Adapter for in the way to convert any G-code holster to in waistband. So you can take your G-code holster that you buy that you'd, you know, mount on a mule rig or on a leg rig or on a belt rig or a paddle, and you could take that and then attach it to this and turn it into an in-the-waistband holster. Same holster, you just pay, I don't even know what this the cost on this was, but I don't know.
On their website, they're going for 40-ish range, but I mean, that's, and then you add $10 for this, you can add 20 for that, depending on the model. Well, I'm sure you'll have your prices up on your website soon though, right?
Probably.
Says the guy who asked to do it, by the sounds of it.
That's me.
Cool. What else, Owen?
Did we lose Owen?
Yeah, I was gone there for a minute, but I'm back now.
Oh, all right then. And he's back.
So, yeah, I just today was, this afternoon, was trying that on, playing around, running around the house, putting myself in different positions and, you know, just kind of trying it out and seeing how it worked. in an appendix carry, which I'd never tried before. So,
cool.
That was kind of neat. Today I printed off, with a little bit of difficulty, but I did get it all printed off and ready to go, a number of NFA petitions. And I got some signatures on one and dropped off a set at two local gun stores. And both agreed to have people sign it. We'll see what happens.
Good.
Sometimes you take that stuff in and people go, oh, yeah, we'll do that. And then they stick it in a drawer. And
that's it, yeah.
Never sees the light of day. But I plan on going in like once a week and bugging them about it. So, I'm shooting for a goal of 200 signatures, but we'll see if I can make that work.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And I know, unlike Matthew, I know a lot of people in the area, so.
You have little excuse. You should really be able to get a lot of people on that.
You're from there. You speak the language. I mean, Matthew's got to be behind the eight ball.
And not that where Matthew isn't, but this is a real rural enough community that the people that you talk to who maybe are not even gun people are still willing to sign stuff like this because they know
just
because
it's you and know I'm. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I took it in and flopped it down in my family. My mother signed it and didn't even ask what it was. I'm gonna start beating the streets, taking it with me to customers' houses, you know, everything. Get as many signatures on there as I can. The only other thing I did was this week I got involved in a conversation on the NFA Facebook page, and I'm now trying to help a guy get a part for his gun from the Philippines.
Oh, that's always good fun.
Yeah, kind of interesting. I think there's only like three of these in Canada, somebody said. It's a Shooter's Arms SAS 12-gauge pump-action shotgun. This is a shotgun that looks like an AR-15, but it's a pump-action.
Interesting.
Mag-fed.
Yeah, they tried that in Canada to see if they could get rid of the magazine restrictions on for that, but they said no. Because the magazine will still fit in a... It would have to be a magazine that would only fit in that and not into a semi-auto AR.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it is... Yeah. You look at the magazine, it doesn't look anything like an AR mag.
Yeah, it had to be proprietary.
But it's still only a 6-round mag. It looks to be about the same size as an AR mag, but 6-round. Anyways, but he bought it secondhand, and I think the guy had it before. It's not stamped, and I think the guy had it before it was shooting 3-inch magnums through it.
Oh,
only a 2 3/4-inch gun.
Ah, oh, that'll be a problem.
So there was a part inside that snapped off after about 4 rounds, 5 rounds when this guy had it. So anyway, he had tried to contact the company and get a part, and they said, we don't sell to individuals. And so I said,
I'm a dealer.
I'm a dealer. I will, you know, I have a firearms business. I'll see if we can see what, you know, if they'll talk to me, you know. So I sent a message email off to the company, and they got right back to me and said, what do you need? What part do you need? And we'll see what we can do for you. And so he sent me a bunch of pictures and I sent them off to him, and we'll see if anything happens. So
speaking of cool shotguns, did you guys see it's essentially a Nirenko T97 bullpup magazine fed semi-auto shotgun?
Yes.
Yep.
I thought you did, because I remember sending you guys the Facebook message as soon as I said that.
Yeah, that's kind of
cool. That's on the short list.
that's kind of cool, especially if it takes a magazine that will fit in AR pouches, you know, that kind of, then it comes a little more practical, you know.
Yeah, if you don't have to change your rig, right?
That's right.
And before that, there was the Escort Tactical Law Enforcement, or the Escort Raider. It's also a semi-auto with a detachable box mag. Have you guys seen that one?
I haven't seen that one, no.
The profile is very much like the Escort pump action shotgun, the way the pistol grips is made and stuff, but it's not a bullpup, but it's still a semi-auto mag fed.
Yeah.
We can get away with more capacity in our tubular magazine shotguns than we can with box fed, but
you can feed so much faster. You can do a mag change so much faster.
Well, this is it, right? Maybe you can change mags faster than you can reload that tube, right?
Yeah, probably can once you practice. For 3-gun, it certainly has some application.
Yeah, you're going to start with 6 in the gun and a bunch of mags. Giddy up.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's all I did. So, Matthew, what about you?
What about me?
What did you do with guns this week?
Ah, right. It was almost a no-hitter again for me this week, but Stacy from the Armed Squirrels, from the Squirrels Friends Rifleman Challenge, she had a post on that Facebook wall today saying that she was sad that there were so few people who'd participated in the challenge this month that I went and printed off a bunch of targets and I went to the range. So thanks to her, I did actually get out to the range and do some shooting. So
and looks like you might have won. That was a pretty wicked.
Well, we'll see. Shot. There's a couple other nice ones there too. So
how long has it been since you won? Because you're not allowed to win twice within.
Yeah, if I win, I'll let the second place person have it. I've already won once. I don't need to win again. Especially if they send me the same stuff. I don't need two shirts.
I need a shirt.
That's true.
I'm never going to win. So.
All right, so if I do win, they'll send me that. So Sticks, if you're listening, or Stacy, or whoever, like Owen takes a large. So I need a large shirt if I win this time. I'm just saying. Because so. Anyway, that was fun. I figured while I was out there anyway, I should take my Beretta, my pistol, little 22 pistol out and see where it's hitting, because you guys remember I got the short barrel for it from some guy out in Alberta. I forget his name now, but I got a short barrel for it. So I had the 6-inch barrel that came with the gun when I won it, and it was just sitting there and I was doing nothing with it, because who wants a 6-inch barrel on a small little handgun? So I gave it to a buddy of mine who works in a machine shop, and he took it to work, and on some downtime, he cut it to 108 millimeters, which is 2 millimeters longer than I wanted, but still legal, so that's okay. It's cool. And threaded the barrel just for fun, because if I'm going to be James Bond, I got to have a threaded 22 pistol, right?
Yeah, get yourself one of the fake cans that come on the GSGs.
That's what I'm thinking. I want to get one of those and stick it on there, and then I can really play James Bond. So anyway, so I got the barrel threaded, and
I think you should put a comp on it.
I that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah.
Just for fun,
you name to Thomas.
just for fun, I took a flash hider from an AR-15. I had a spare one from my build, and I threaded it on the front just to. Oh, that looks interesting.
A couple of weeks ago, I was looking for a flash hider, and I had to have one sent to me from BC. Thanks for coming to my rescue on that.
Well, did you ask me if I had one?
I asked the internet.
You didn't ask me. I'm not the internet. I only correct the internet.
Like Owen, you've unfollowed me on Facebook, clearly.
That's not true. I just you have so many posts, it's hard for me to sift through all of them.
Like 4 a day is not a lot by a teenage girl standards.
I'm sorry. Anyway, so I also did have to reattach the front sight, and I attached it, and I made sure that it was higher, because the farther back a front sight is on any gun, the farther back it is, the higher it's going to have to be so that your point of aim is still the same. So I did make it higher. I made it way too high, though. I'm shooting 2.5 inches low at 15 feet, so 5 yards. I'm 2.5 inches low. So I need to really file down the front sight, but I figured too high was better than too low, because I can't file up. I can only file down. So I did the math, and anybody who's interested, which probably not, but think of it as a kind of mini shooter's corner here. If you need to adjust the sight height or adjust your sights at all, it's very simple math formula. Measure everything in inches. So off the bat, just remember you're measuring everything in inches. You take the error, so the distance from where you're aiming to where your group is actually printing. That's the error inches. Divide that by the distance, how far away you are from the target, and then multiply that by the sight radius, the distance between your front sight and your rear sight. And that will give you, in inches, how much you need to adjust your sight to correct that error. So,
is that like trigonometry? What is that?
It is sort of like trigonometry.
Can you write that out and put it on our Facebook page or something?
I could do that, yeah.
That's an interesting formula.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure it out, and after I figured it out, it turned out that there's online calculators all over the place that figure that out for you, but I did it the hard way and figured other people could benefit from my stupidity, because I could have just looked online. You guys could just look online too, but I'll put the formula on the
But looking online, you still need to know what measurements you need to plug into the formula.
That's true. Yep. So yeah, I can write that out and put that on the Facebook page so people can look at that and maybe write it down or save it for themselves if they want to ever adjust anything in the future.
Holy saving ammo, Batman.
Yeah, it works really well too. I have used this formula before and it does work quite well. I always err on the side of caution. So I know that I have to lower my sight height by 0.59 inches. I'm only going to lower it by 0.55. and then go back to the range and shoot, and then I'll file off a little bit more at a time. You always want to take off less than you need because you can't put it back on. People who have adjustable sights, this is a gun that has, it's not adjustable. It's, you know, you file it. That's it. So if you have adjustable sights, it's fine. You can do whatever you like. But if you're filing down a front sight, do it slowly, very slowly. So anyway, that was fun. And I guess this isn't something I've done, but something that I'll be doing. I will be appearing on the new Shooter podcast with George and Tom this week to talk about coyote hunting. And I don't know why they called me.
Me either.
I've only shot...
How many coyotes have you shot?
I've shot and killed one coyote in my life. But I've gone hunting a couple of times for them.
Yeah, the three of us have gone at least once, and the two of us have gone a couple of times. Yeah.
We haven't been successful yet, but we sort of know what we're doing, and maybe that's why they called and asked me. Maybe they just felt bad that I haven't been on their show yet. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it. So if you guys want to check out New Shooter Podcast this episode coming up.
You're going to brag. I'm going to brag, too. They're having me on to talk about ARs. So
this week as well?
No.
Oh. Well,
when his lower parts kit comes in or something.
Right. Well, that'll be cool.
No, they would never, ever have us on at the same time.
They should have all three of us on at the same time. They just never talk. It'd be another episode of Slam Fire Radio.
It'd be you and I and Owen, like, going once in a while.
I just like hearing you guys talk. You have nice voices, and it's just, this is my time out. I can sit here and, you know, in the evening, and nobody bothers me, and just let you guys ramble.
You're like, honey, keep the kids quiet. I'm doing the podcast. Meanwhile, you just come in here and sleep.
Reading a book.
Yeah, he's reading a book, having a quick little nap. He's come to find out he hasn't been on
the crack on my phone.
Yeah, he hasn't been on the show in years. He'll quit sometime, and he'll still be telling the wife, "Oh no, I got to do the show. Just an hour and a half, yeah, maybe 2 hours. Better make it 2 hours. Keep him quiet."
Owen, I've said it before, you only speak when you have something worthwhile to say, unlike some of the other hosts in the show that just like to fill up air in between Owen comments.
Trevor, Matthew, wait, that's me. Crap, burned myself. anyway, that's all I did this week, so I guess we can move on to some upcoming events.
All right, upcoming events, we have the fourth annual...
Do you want to try that again?
What?
The fifth that again?
Annual?
Yeah, that's a five.
Sorry. A little too far away from my computer here. Fifth
Get
annual
back into your TARDIS.
On June the 27th.
It's bigger on the inside.
All proceeds going towards the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation.
And we were talking to Steve Lee before the show, and he said he might come.
Yeah.
He penciled it into his diary.
If some Bolivar guy doesn't come, I think that was the condition.
He said if Bolivar's not there, he's
I'm in.
Pair a course with Tommy Nelson on July 3rd with the following, I mean, he matched the following day.
Can I give an update on that?
Sure, go ahead.
If everything goes according to plan, Tom is going to be on next week's show to discuss the details of what we're going to do this year. And, it's going to be, payment's going to be a little bit different this year. You're not going to pay us. You're going to pay Tom.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, you're going to do payment directly to him through his website.
Excellent. That's way better. Because we've got an issue coming up here we're going to talk about in a minute. So,
yeah. So, there's some updates on that.
Very good.
If you're interested in the class, especially if you took it before, speak up and we'll probably start a little pre-registration list perhaps.
Yeah, we should do that. Start compiling names.
Yeah, but we're not officially taking anyone's money yet. Neither is Tom. So
right, but we will.
Oh yes,
stay tuned. SummerSlam coming up August the 8th and 9th. So that's, I don't know if there's anything else to say about that.
I got dates. Something too there. Somebody told me that the hotel is already sold out. I don't think it is. I think they forgot to ask for the IPSC block of rooms. But the hotel has changed management. It's now called the Days Inn. telephone numbers are all the same as they were last year. The telephone number for the Days Inn is posted on CGN under the action shooting section on the SummerSlam post. So if you're going to get a room at the host hotel, it's the Days Inn in Dalhousie, and I would not wait. It'll probably actually sell out before registrations come online in a couple of weeks.
And NFA AGM, May 23rd, 24th in Quebec City. So if you're anywhere in Eastern Canada or you would like to do some flying and you're in Western Canada.
you could do that too.
Yep.
You have to register for this if you want to attend. The registration is on the NFA website. I believe the cost is $45. I should grab one of the registration forms, but I have to get up so we know that's not going to happen.
No.
Yeah, but the information's, of course, on the NFA website. And, yeah, come on out, meet Matthew and I.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
And this is following is kind of a public service announcement, I guess, that there could be some price changes for those attending our courses this year because of the Canadian dollar. It's kind of going down, going up, and mostly going down. And so,
because the range rental has gone up.
Yeah. Range rental's gone up. We're bringing instructors from the States, which means they're expecting a certain amount of money from the States or for, in U.S. cash, U.S. dollar, which means we have to, you got to charge more Canadian money to get that, to meet that U.S.
So we haven't officially changed any prices yet because we're going to hope that the Canadian dollar rebounds and there's not going to, because when we did come up with the price, we already did factor in a bit of a currency exchange. We just didn't factor in enough. So if it does rebound and we get back up to like the 90-cent range.
Because we still have a bunch of months. I mean, a lot could
happen. Oh, yeah. We got a while to go yet. So, but if it doesn't, if we continue to fall, like we have been, and we're hovering around the 80 cents like we are now, we're going to have to charge a little bit more. So those of you who've paid your deposit, I mean, that won't change. We just might have to bump up the rest of your payment. But we'll talk about that more later. Yep. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up so that you weren't, you know, blindsided by this. Let's just all hope and pray the Canadian dollar rebounds, and then we won't have to, no problems then.
Yeah, now if it goes the other way, do they get a refund?
We'll have to cancel the, if it goes,
So should I be buying silver? Is the dollar tanking here?
It hasn't tanked yet. It's 79 cents, which isn't great, but it's been worse. Ouch. I mean, I remember when it was 60, so.
Wow. Does that have anything to do with the gas being low again?
It might.
No, nothing with the gas being low again.
The air might.
Yeah, this year's financial advice brought to you by three Yahoos in New Brunswick.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it doesn't look like we have any news, so we're going to jump right into the main topic. So this week for the main topic, we have a returning special guest, Officer Frank. Welcome to the show again, Officer Frank.
Thank you.
And what we decided to do was we didn't really have a specific topic for this, so we decided to ask the listeners last week, I think we asked, didn't we? The
first like
post,
that.
Yeah.
Monday.
Post on Facebook, yeah. Put it on Facebook, and if people had questions for Officer Frank, then they could post them, and we would ask them to him on the show. So that's what we've done, and we got quite a bit of feedback. Some serious, I'm not so serious, but we'll see how things go. So let's jump right into the first one. This comes from Paul Lathrop, who asks, why does Officer Frank lower himself to the level of actually talking with the likes of Furlot?
That's cool.
Well, I'm not going to reply because Trevor has feelings.
I don't want to hurt them. That's right. I have two. One is hate, the other is greed. Those are feelings, Dan.
So I don't want to hurt his feelings, so I'm not going to reply to that one.
Okay, so well, you can just send me an email, Officer Frank, telling me your true opinions, and I'll pass that on to Paul.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Okay, next one comes from Kyle Marconi, who says, can't remember if this has ever been said. Why did he choose law enforcement as a career?
I don't even know if I've ever asked you that.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I guess it's...
I know.
Okay.
But you go ahead, and then I'll...
I know what you're going to say,
Trevor will tell everyone what you're really saying.
That's right. I'll tell you, you give your answer, and then
like
I'll tell
I don't want to sound cheesy or whatever, but like we see it on every police cars in the U.S., it's basically the serve and protect. Mm-hmm. So it's I don't know, it's part of protecting people and that's it, helping people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't see it that way when we arrest them, but the person arrested doesn't see it that way.
You're not helping that person. You're helping the person you've arrested him for hurting.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you're helping the rest of us when you arrest somebody.
Yeah.
And this is something that has been in my family. It started with my grandfather, and now it's me. So.
And that's what I thought you were going to say, I knew about your dad. I don't think I knew about your grandfather.
I wasn't pushed towards that career. I was never directed. Like, my dad never said, well, you should join the police or whatever. He let me choose what I wanted to do, and I don't know. This is what I wanted to do. So.
And you actually had a career before this one.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
I was a bush pilot.
Best job ever.
Flying float planes in northern Quebec.
Nice. That's awesome. I know someone who's there. He's a pilot. He flies like commercial airlines now, but he used to do that too. Fly bush pilots in and out, or fly bush planes in and out. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Well, I guess that answers that pretty well. And Chris Anderson asks.
Never heard of her.
Either. Who would be more of a threat in a gun battle? A terrorist or Dirt McGirt?
Well, I don't know Dirt McGirt, but I would say a terrorist.
You take that, Dirt.
Because well, at least the terrorist wouldn't be shooting their gun sideways.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, sorry.
I should have kept interrupting you.
You should have. Look, you can't interrupt the interrupter. I just keep going.
That's true.
I've made it my job, my mission.
Well, that's pretty, yeah, okay. Terrorist. Del Ravio. Ravio?
It's not ravioli. Matthew told me specifically not ravioli.
No L in it. Okay. I have a question regarding self-defense in the home. In a recent case, a rural fellow was charged after shooting a home invader in his house, then shooting at the car as the suspects fled. Do you think he would have been charged if the only shot he took was in the house before the suspects turned to escape?
You see, the key word in here is self-defense.
Uh-huh.
The guy's in my house. Okay, what is he in here for? Why am I shooting him? Because he wants to leave with my TV or my wallet? Or because he wants to harm me? Mm-hmm. You know, like it's...
Yeah, you have to prove self-defense.
It's exactly. Like, you have to But you have to prove that this person was there to harm you, and you're defending yourself. You're not defending your home. You're defending yourself. It says self-defense.
Not home defense.
Not property defense. Yeah,
exactly.
I would hazard a guess that regardless of the situation, he probably would have been better off probably would have been less likely to get charged if he didn't shoot the car as they drove away.
Right. Yeah, well,
probably,
exactly.
But we don't know what happened in the house. But yeah. I would hazard a guess that shooting a fleeing vehicle is always a bad idea.
We talked about this in the last show. And then if you remember back to Officer Frank's comment last time he was on the show, you can't shoot somebody for what they did. You can shoot to stop a threat, to protect your life, to protect your family's life.
Right.
But shooting them for while they're leaving is vengeance. It's not defense.
That's right.
Now you're the aggressor. Now you're the attacker. So definitely, if there's any chance at avoiding charges, it's going to be before you shoot at them when they're leaving. Yeah. And if he can prove self-defense in the home, then.
And again, it's very complicated. Like it's a thin line to play with.
Yes, it is.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. If, yeah. I mean, if he's found at the scene with a weapon. There's a history,
every situation is different. So I cannot answer that question by black or white because I don't have enough information.
Are you a Los Angeles Police Department officer? Because black and whites, that's what they drive, right?
No, but I mean, there's a lot of gray zone in that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If there was a prior history between the suspect
The question is too open to give a clear answer.
Yeah.
And again, it depends on.
But I think when it comes to generalizations, it's definitely what Matthew said. You could generalize and say you're going to be. It's less likely you're going to be charged, whatever the situation. You're less likely to be charged by not shooting at the car as he's driving away.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty blatant. Not pretty blatant. I mean, no.
Yeah. I'll come back to the example of St. John a couple of years ago. And then when I asked you about it, Officer Frank, at the time, you hadn't even heard about it. There was a guy who was attacked by three or four individuals in downtown St. John, and they put a beating on him. He went home. They went to his home with firearms to finish him off. He came out with his own firearm because the threat was imminent. They were coming into his home with guns. He confronted them from his front door, shot three of the four, and two or three died. He didn't spend a night in jail. It was a clear-cut case. They went there on his property with guns to kill him.
Yeah, well, that shows intent right there.
Yes. They didn't go to rob his TV with guns. I mean, they had already beaten him up prior that day, and they were going to finish him.
No.
And so to say you're always going to get charged is not the case. This happened in Canada. This happened in New Brunswick. So,
So again, it's the totality of the situation. It's not only one thing.
Many variables.
Yeah, there's many, exactly.
Okay. This next one comes from Bonnie Parker, who says, what is the best way for a woman to defend herself against an attacker since I cannot use my gun?
Aim for the nutsack.
Yeah.
It's I don't know,
A good self-defense course is probably the best.
Yeah, and don't. First of all, is do as much as you can to place yourself in that situation where you're going to need to defend yourself.
That's what I was just going to say. Avoid the bad situations.
Yeah, at some point, it's not avoidable.
Exactly, yeah. Like, at some point, it could be in your home.
Yeah,
it could be your spouse.
But, you know. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's aim for the nutsack, good self-defense, hit like you just don't want to die.
Yeah, nice. Hit like you don't want to die.
No, that's true. Yeah, there's some, especially for women. I ran across this a lot from my sword fighting days when we would have female fighters.
And to clarify, point of order, a stick is not a sword. Carry on.
Whatever. I could beat you with either one. But anyway, they have a real mental block against hitting people. Women do generally. Not all women, but some women. For
you
whatever
haven't met some of my exes.
They, when it comes to actually hitting someone to hurt them, they have a real mental block. And that's a big leap for some women to get over, even when they go to take martial arts or self-defense classes. That's something you have to really mentally get over to be able to do. Even in that sort of life and death situation, it can get them killed because even you would think that your instinct of survival would kick in and you'd want to, you know, you do everything you can, but that's not necessarily the case if it's such lizard brain in your head that you aren't supposed to hit people.
Now, let's say, okay, other than aiming for the sack, does she have any, we can't carry weapons for self-defense, right? Like I have a baton in my car, very similar to the one you carry on your belt, but it's not there for self-defense. I'm trained in first aid, first responder. If I come across an accident scene and I need to bust out a window, I'm going to use that baton.
Mm-hmm.
If three guys chase me in my car and they're going to kill me, I may fall back on that baton as well. Does she have any options for something that she could carry in Canada to use for self-defense other than a martial arts class? Like, where do we stand on pepper spray? Can anyone carry?
No, it's a prohibited weapon.
Okay. And she would look funny carrying a can of bear spray or dog spray in downtown Toronto, wouldn't she?
Again, if she get arrested, anyways, if she get caught with that, she could be charged with, I'm not sure, but it's something like carrying a weapon.
Yeah, it happens so rarely that it's something that you've got memorized. You have to look
exactly.
At. There's a gray area there.
What are the chances of seeing a bear in downtown Toronto?
But you can get those little cans of dog spray. And if you're legitimately scared of dogs and you feel that little can of dog spray would help you fight off a dog, then you can legally carry that to fight off a dog. And if you get attacked by a two-legged predator, you're legally allowed to use that because it's at your disposal. I think the key there is you're not allowed to carry it for self-defense mm-hmm. against people. That's the differentiating factor there. If you get you get stopped by the police and they say, why do you have this dog spray? Well, because my ex has been harassing me. Okay, mm-hmm. you're going into the bracelets. But if you say, I'm terrified of dogs. I got attacked as a child and you know, I'm scared of dogs and I go by this house. There's always dogs barking. I've got it in case they attack me. Oh, okay. Well, I think you're okay then. That's how I understand it anyway. Can you confirm that for me, officer?
I'd say that's pretty much it there. But again, like, if you say mm-hmm. that you carry it to protect yourself from dog and stuff, and you know,
yeah, and the reason why,
again, there will be an investigation, and,
of course,
and sometimes we can find out if people lie or not.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, sometimes you can prove that they're not scared of dogs if they own six dogs.
That's it. So,
yeah, exactly.
If you're a dog owner and you're carrying dog spray, chances are you may not have it for dogs. I'm just saying.
And it's my understanding the rationale for us to not be allowed to carry this stuff is that it's simple for a criminal to carry it and say, well, it's for self-defense, when really the criminal intends to use it to victimize somebody and mug them.
And sometimes a criminal need to defend themselves because of what they're involved in.
That's unfortunate.
They should have chosen a better career.
That's what I was saying. You said that criminals need to defend themselves.
Sometimes. Yes. Because of the people, they.
It's called a job related hazard.
We don't feel too sad for the criminals here on this show.
Yeah, well, I'm not feeling sad, but you know what I mean when I say that. Yeah. Like, they don't need to defend themselves. That's not what I'm saying, but sometimes they'll be in a position when they have to because of what they do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They might owe people money. Some people might owe them money or drugs or whatever. So
yeah, so it keeps it out of our hands because the lawmakers are trying to keep it out of their hands. Mm-hmm. But it's like I'm going to go down a rabbit hole here. It's like magazine restrictions. Criminals can have full capacity mags, so why can't I? Mm-hmm. Right? Because criminals unpin their mags, so now we're at a disadvantage. If they get to unpin their mags, well, if they get caught, of course they get charged, but it's the magazine capacity is laughable. Depending on the mag, of course, like these mags, my M&P mags, there's nothing you can do with that that's permanently fixed. But
yeah, there's a whole rant there that I was, you know, and I'm not going to go off on it, but there's a whole rant on, you know, to protect the general public from criminals, we put laws in place that enable the criminals to hurt the general public, basically is how it boils down to, because only the general public obeys the laws, the criminals don't. And so you've just disarmed the entire population to try to disarm a very small select people who hurt us, but they just don't follow the laws and they still continue to hurt us. So
what I was trying to say, well put.
I don't want to get into
No. And like I said, this is not against, police at all. This is against the system. So,
but even then, like, we could spend the night talking about this, but it's like, defend yourself. Like, I don't carry when I'm not working. And I, even though I'm
a bigger target,
could be allowed very easily. But I don't carry when I'm not working. And if I was allowed, I probably wouldn't either. Because I don't feel the need to defend myself.
Yeah, but I still think that decision should be each individual person's decision. I don't think that should be dictated to us by the government. I think the government should say, if you feel the need to protect yourself and to carry something to protect yourself, go for it. I mean, ultimately, we are responsible for our own safety. If I call 911 because somebody's attacking me, the police are on their way, but they're not here yet. And now I'm dead because they didn't get here in time. Well, why should I give my responsibility for my life and my safety to somebody who literally can't do it for me? Why should I not be allowed to carry the tools I need to keep myself alive until they can get there and help me?
Because you live in Canada.
Because I live in Canada.
All right.
Anyway, that's right. Well, I kind of went off that on a rant.
Attacker to death, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't want to go down that rant, but I did anyway. So, all right.
It's okay. It's all good. Relax. Sit down. Sit down. Here's your sippy cup.
Oh, thank you.
Jesse says, what was Officer Frank's view on guns prior to Depot? How were these those views changed after Depot, if at all. Well, thanks. We said, as well, please thank him for his service. So, Officer Frank, thank you for your service, first of all. But basically he's asking, what were your guns, what were your view on guns prior to going into the RCMP, and did those views change at all?
I've always liked guns. I've always been a gun enthusiast. I'm the only one in my family, I would say, who liked guns and who likes guns. And
your dad's a hunter.
My dad?
Yeah.
Not much.
No?
Oh, no.
That's why you have his hunting rifle?
No, but I don't think he used it more than twice.
Okay. So, all right. So no.
No, he's not a hunter. So I've always liked guns. I've always, been interested in guns. My views didn't change in before or after Depot. With the latest events that happened the last couple of years anyways, let's say this since Mayor Tor, I think more about my coworkers who've lost their lives, and I still like guns, and anyways, I still think that we need some sort of control on that, because the more legal guns you have out there, the more illegal guns you're going to have, in the sense that there will be more break-enters into homes to steal guns, and then you get guns on the road that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. That's the only. But again, I'm on the side of the people. I'm on the side of the guys that are getting shot. So.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that. I mean, the more guns there are in circulation, the more guns there will be that are stolen and used for nefarious purposes. I'm sorry, but that's the fact. The more guns there are, the more guns there are. I mean, that's simple logic. I think, you know,
we just need to have the guns in the right hands.
That's right. And to prevent them from getting into the wrong hands, I think you need to take those wrong hands and just get them off the street and not let them back on the street. I think we saw recently a case where somebody should have been in jail, wasn't, and took the life of an RCMP officer and wounded another. We just need to, the justice system, and I use the term improperly because it's legal system, because it's not justice at all, the legal system needs to smarten up a little bit and keep the violent offenders away from the general public.
Yeah,
they're violent offenders. They don't need to be in public. I'm sorry, but once you've proven yourself to be a violent person, you've lost the right to interact with normal people. And the more of those we let out of jail and let wander the streets, the more guns we're going to have in bad people's hands. So I don't think it's a matter of taking the guns away from the good guys. It's a matter of keeping the bad guys away from them.
Yeah, because the exact same situation happened in Marethorpe, Alberta. He was known. He was known to police. He had a history of being a bully. He was not supposed to have access to firearms. But guess what? Criminals don't follow the law. I know he's entitled to certain rights as well, but
like as a criminal, I don't think people are. I don't think criminals should have any rights. The only rights have is
they're humans. So I mean, there are certain human rights that they have.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. No. I do. Yeah. Good.
The only way to prevent these violent offenders from reoffending is either, keep them in or monitor them more closely. You know, I mean, once you, like you said, Matthew, once you've proven that you're too violent to be around other people, then all bets are off and you should be treated a little differently. I'm all about random drug testing. Oh, Your Honor, I only committed the crime because I'm addicted to drugs. Fine. You want to stay out of jail? Random drug testing. First time you come back not clean, you're going in. I'm okay with that. And people who aren't supposed to have weapons, guess what? We're going to search your house whenever we feel like it, because you've lost the right to have privacy.
Absolutely. Anyway. So, you're right, Trevor. Maybe we don't need to actually keep them locked up in jail, but a better monitoring system needs to be in place.
Because when they're in jail, we're paying for them.
That's right. I still think jail should be up somewhere in the Northwestern Territories where there's no walls. The trees are the walls, basically, and the polar bears are the guards.
Yeah, or I'm okay with that. Out in the desert, you want to escape? Go. You'll be dead in 3 days.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, all right, what's next?
Okay. Next we have...
We're very, very compassionate people.
Philip Hoffman. Officer Frank, where do baby 1911s come from?
The devil. Tell him the devil.
I don't know. We'll call it a fertility clinic there.
Oh, man. Isn't that when, like, I don't know, an AK and a Norinco have a one-night stand? They get an 1911 or something like that?
What's the BB 1911 anyways? It's a small one, like a 22?
Maybe. I don't even know.
I thought when two bullets had got married, they had a BB.
When a mommy 1911 and a daddy 1911 love each other very much, they share a special hug.
Well, we didn't Mark Price have an issue with his 1911 getting
did.
A little bit frisky in his safe there?
Not frisky. It was assaulted. He stored his 1911 frame in his gun case with his grandpower. And when he opened the case the next day, the slide from the grandpower had made its way onto the 1911.
You got to keep your eye on those things. You can't lock them up together. Oh, it's dangerous.
Yeah. Anyway, we hate 1911s. Next.
Dalton Hewitt, I've got one about knives, since we can't carry firearms. So this question is about knives. From what I've heard, if you are carrying a knife, it has to be visible. And if you say, I'm carrying it for self-defense, you'll get arrested since you're not allowed to carry a weapon. Somebody did not copy and paste this very good, did they?
No, they didn't, because apparently it's supposed to have more to it, and I'm going to get the rest of it now. Because it was one of those comments where you have to press to see more. To
what you want to see.
Well, there's one part that you can already answer, and that's about telling someone you're carrying it specifically for self-defense. We already covered that.
Yeah.
We know that we're not allowed to carry knives with the intent purpose of self-defense.
Mm. Now, I can read the rest of it if you'd like.
Well, hold on one second, Matthew. Okay. What about his question, Frank, about does it have to be visible?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to say, but that criminal code is so thick, we have to look at it very often.
All right, okay, so let's say pull me over, and for whatever reason you need me to step out of the car, and you're going to pat me down. Something has tweaked your interest, and I'm now a person of interest, and you're going to pat me down. You pat me down, and you find this pocket knife in my pocket. And so you recognize, you can feel it, you know what it is, you take it out. What happens next?
Well, why did I arrest you for?
I don't know if I'm under arrest yet.
Well, if I search you.
All right, so there's marijuana in the car. There was a joint burning in the ashtray.
Okay.
So you step out of the car.
That explains a lot, John.
Yeah, it does explain a lot. Yeah.
Listen, at least I'm not doing meth anymore. So, you pat me down, you find that in my pocket. What happens next?
Well, I'll seize it.
Okay. Why?
You're not going to get charged with the... Well, I'll seize it for now because it could be used against me while I'm dealing with you.
Okay.
So I'll keep it for my safety.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't charge you with any concealed weapon or anything like that because it can be used as a tool.
That's right.
This one can be used as a tool.
Okay, what about this one? You know, I was going to bring my folding kukri and put that in my pocket. Yeah, okay, so a pocket knife is a pocket knife. Exactly. Don't sweat it. Okay.
Okay, so let me finish the question here. I don't know if there's anything else in the question. I'd like to get it from the view of an officer who may come in contact with a civilian who's carrying a knife, more referring to a folding EDC knife, not your 10-inch hunting fixed, you know, blades or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what about that? If let's say I stepped out of my vehicle and I had, you know, my Moorcraft.
Well, that's what I just did with them.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you couldn't see through the microphone, but that's, you know, I've got those exact EDC knives I was referring to. I had two in my pocket, one on the clip and then one inside the pocket, right? So
this would be like on a belt, like it's a fixed blade.
Like a hunting knife.
Like a hunting knife.
Well, it's the same thing.
As opposed to. He's referring to a folding knife, not your 10-inch hunting knife.
That's right, exactly. But now
I'm asking myself, what about a fixed blade? Do you treat that any differently? Do you kind of look at the surrounding and go, well, you're wearing camo and you've got a rifle in the back, so you were just coming from hunting, obviously. You know, or, you know, how does that?
Well, if you're coming back from hunting and things like that, it's not going to be an issue.
Yeah.
I mean.
The fact that you're drunk. That's the
issue. Exactly. But I mean, okay, so I go for a walk in the woods and I take my kids and my family and I've got my kids and family with me. So again, it's a little different, but even if I don't.
But you're smoking hash while you're out there and you get arrested.
It's not uncommon for me to have a fixed blade knife on, I guess is what I'm saying. For me personally, because I live in a rural area and I carry a fixed blade knife a fair bit. And I get in the car and go to town and I've still got my fixed blade knife on, you know.
And because you're in Woodstock, nobody looks at you twice.
Yeah, exactly.
it's all a judgment call.
Yeah.
It's what time of the year is it? Where are you? What are you doing? Like, why do you have this? It's all.
Yeah, if you're caught stalking your ex-girlfriend and you've got a, you know, a 10-inch kukri in your back pocket, chances are you have that for a bad reason. So you're
walking into a community and college.
Be careful with the knives, too, because there's a whole bunch of knives that are considered as prohibited weapons that we're not allowed to have.
Like switchblades and
butter knife.
No, not butter knife. Butter knives are cool, folks. You heard it here first. Butter knives are cool. It's butterfly knives. Yes.
Yeah, butterfly knives are not our prohibited device or weapon.
Because they're fast to open.
It's because you accidentally lop off your own fingers whenever you're trying to open.
I don't know why, but they're prohibited. Okay.
There's a lot of things that are prohibited we can't explain.
But I think of a knife that has a blade that cuts on both sides, you know, that's made like for a stabbing knife.
Yeah.
Like a dagger. Those that have a handle that goes in the palm of your hand and the blade comes between your fingers.
Yep, called a push knife. Those are prohibited.
Well, those are prohibited. Like, there's a whole bunch of knives that are prohibited. Mm. So be careful what you're carrying.
Right here, the next question, Benny Lewis asks, where can I find out the maximum size of a knife that I can carry in my area?
I don't have a clue.
There could be, well, you could have municipal, like I know in the States, state to state is different and some cities are different than the length of the blade that you can carry. Like, I don't know if we have a folding knife rule that it has to be 4 inches when opened or when closed.
Length restrictions on carrying knives within the Criminal Code of Canada.
Okay. Just on the styles of knives?
On the styles of knives. So the ones that are the list that I have here are automatic knives, so switchblades, centrifugal knives such as flick knives or butterfly knives, gravity knives, constant companion, that's a belt buckle knife, finger rings with blades, push daggers and spiked wristbands. That's a small list of some of the ones that are prohibited in Canada.
Push dagger is the one that you were talking about, with the double-sided blades.
So just a regular double-edged knife, that's not illegal. As long as it doesn't have that 90-degree handle that's designed to go into your palm to push. Like, those ones are the illegal ones.
Oh, this is not a tool.
That's right.
This is made to...
It's made to hurt somebody.
That thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because I was going to ask on that, because, I mean, you start talking about double-edged blades, and then all of a sudden we start talking swords, and I'm thinking about all the people at reenactment events that I've been to.
They have those daggers with double-edged
daggers, because that's what they carried in the Middle Ages, you know, and I'm going, wow, were they all carrying around prohibited weapons?
Well,
you know,
Mistake. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, it's good to know. Because I'd heard that too, that double-edged weapons were blades were kind of iffy. Yeah,
I heard that all the way back since I was a kid, because it creates a wound that doesn't close on its own, blah, blah, blah. Something to do with the wound channel.
A lot of it is somebody who wants to think they know everything and they make it up because they think it's scary, but your best bet is just go read the Criminal Code of Canada and you'll know for sure.
Yeah. There's a whole section about knives and weapons and firearms.
Cool.
All right. Down to, I think, the last question we have from listeners. This is from Mark and Lynn, asking, they would like to know his view on the terminology difference in the media regarding patrol carbines and assault rifles. Also, they would like an officer's view on the militarization of police forces.
So you and I talking about this when I was giving you a hard time about that last time you were over here. How come when you have a patrol carbine, when I have it, it's an assault rifle?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a police question. I think that's a media question. But anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of that? Do you think that's a little silly, isn't it? It's the same rifle.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, a beer bottle is a beer bottle. Until you hit someone with it, it becomes a weapon.
Oh, yeah. But if you hit me with it, it's a tool.
I don't carry a beer bottle on my belt.
Boring.
Anyways. But so it's all a perception, I guess. You know,
the perception of the liberal media.
The military, they assault, right? When they go to combat, sometimes they defend themselves, sometimes they assault. So it's an assault rifle. It's an assault weapon. They use it. We use it as a defense. That's the only thing we can do, anyways. Like protect, defend. So that's the only way we're going to use that firearm.
Really? So if you were in a situation where...
Well, ultimately, we can assault, but yeah, it's going to be to defend something, someone.
Right, okay. Yep. So you're going into a place where there's a violent, you know, home invasion in progress. You know, you're going in to assault, but you're doing it to protect someone else.
Right. Exactly. You're responding to an active shooter.
Yeah.
Still, you're going in to in defense.
Really, it's I don't know. It's a media question mostly.
Yeah.
It would look bad. It would sound weird if the RCMP was to call or patrol carbines. Oh yeah, we have assault rifles now in the police cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, our beef is that. So when the media refers to your AR-15s, patrol carbine, when they refer to civilians' AR-15s, they always call them assault rifles. And they know they're not. They're AR-15s. They're not select fire, so therefore they're not assault rifles. But, you know, it's totally a public relations thing. It's a perception thing. Mm. If the police have it, we have to call it a friendly name. If civilians have it, it's potentially bad. So,
but we cannot call your AR-15 a patrol carbine.
No, because I don't patrol with it.
But you could call it a carbine. You could call it a semi-automatic.
Civilian carbine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. From now on, I'm calling my air civilian carbines.
Yeah, well, call it like you want. And the media will keep calling it like you feel it's right.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions we had from listeners. Guys, do you have any other?
Oh, hold on. There was a second part of that question.
Yes, that's right.
Officer's view of the militarization of police forces.
Well. So, Mark and Lynn Mitchie.
Yeah.
I'd like that question to be more detailed.
Well, let me speculate. We see police stations, and often not there. I think the RCMP is the least militarized, and you guys were borrowing Brinks armored trucks in Moncton. You know, you see a lot of police forces in the States buying leftover military surplus vehicles and armored vehicles, things that the military would normally have. Now local municipal police forces are buying this equipment. The RCMP was the last police force in Canada to get patrol carbines. All the other police stations have had AR-15s for years. You guys were the last to get them. So what's your opinion on small, like let's say BNPP, them getting an armored vehicle, police stations like that getting armored vehicles?
Well, It's very simple. If you go and if tomorrow I go to a company and I say, okay, I want you to build me a armored vehicle for police work. I need this and this in it. How much will it cost me? Well, it's going to cost you half a million. Okay. And if I turn around and I go to the military, and I say, I'd like to have an old, what are they, bison?
I don't
like those
yeah,
eight.
The bison, yeah.
The bison. Okay. So I'd like to buy an old bison. How much is it? 150 grand?
Done.
Done deal.
Exactly.
And that vehicle with little modifications is going to be up to par with what the police needs.
Here's my question, though. We've gone
anyways, to me, that's the only reason behind it. It's money.
And that makes sense. But we've gone from the Andy Griffith show where cops walked around, you know, sometimes without even a gun and patrolled. And, you know, they didn't feel the need to have bulletproof vests and didn't feel the need to carry batons and pepper spray. But now we've got police, you know, in full riot gear sometimes.
Well,
and they look very military. And I know what my answer is, and I understand why the police are like that. But I think that might be sort of where this question kind of comes from, is why have we seen such a shift in how the police are now portrayed and how they arm themselves and equip themselves?
Well, times have changed. That's one thing. And the other thing is again, that's my opinion. But back then, you were in the job, you get hurt. What do you get? Let's say 40 years ago. Okay. I'm a police officer. I lose an eye. Maybe I'll have a paycheck.
You show up to work on Monday.
maybe that's it. I'll show up to work on Monday with an eye. I'll get a paycheck until my retirement. So that was it. Now, if I lose an eye, it's a veterans affair. It costs a lot more to get hurt today than it did 40 years ago.
And I think the opportunity to get hurt is heightened now, because I think we've really seen a loss of respect for our law enforcement officers. And with that loss of respect comes a heightened danger for you guys, because people are now more willing to assault you and to hurt you. And you need to step up and carry the tools that you need to stop that from happening. And that's a bigger problem than any of us can talk about tonight. But I think, anyway, that's one of the main reasons why you guys have had to go the route you have.
And it's not only, like, I'm talking about money, but it's not only money. We're talking about, like people. If I break my arm tomorrow, I'm off work for a little while, then I'll get some indemnization. That's the word, right?
Yeah, sure.
Anyways, because I broke my arm, my arc will remain weak for maybe the rest of my life. It's all a cost involved, and it's also the person. I mean, it's also a person that got hurt.
But I mean,
yeah. And they approach it from that same view as if I'm on a job and I'm a plumber and I'm on a job and I don't want my guys to get hurt because it costs me with their off and I lose time on, you know, that they would have been being productive. Plus my workman's compensation goes up and all those sorts of things. So I'm going to do that. Just that what's now cheap. To make sure everybody's wearing their hard hats and has their proper safety equipment and their personal protective gear, I, as an employer, I'm going to do that up front because that is going to save me in the long run as far as costs. And you're right, they're probably looking at it from that perspective, saying we want to be a little proactive here and make sure that they have the protective gear they need to do the job right. Yes, the personal factor, keep people alive so people aren't getting hurt, but also so that you're right, it doesn't cost us in the long run to have to pay someone forever, you know, and their families forever if they get killed on the job or, you know, something very bad happens.
Like back in the days when I was a bush pilot, okay, I remember seeing a poster one day. It was to promote safety. And it was very simple. That poster said, you think safety or security, I'm not sure which was the word, you think safety is expensive, try an accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is that simple.
I think one of the reasons why we're seeing, and, you know, police using military style equipment, police aren't turning into the military, but they are using military style equipment. They're facing different threats than they were before. And I think these changes weren't initiated by the police. They're a response to new and ever increasing threats. We have terrorist attacks happening now. We have, school shootings are on the rise. These things weren't happening 40 years ago, so the police weren't equipped the way they are today.
And don't forget, like, the equipment we get, it's not because it looks cool or because it's cool. It's to help us better protect you guys.
Yeah.
And because it works. Yeah.
Yeah. You're
like, public safety is our priority, but a dead cop cannot achieve public safety.
No.
An injured police officer cannot achieve public safety.
Yeah. I mean,
just like a dead firefighter cannot fight the fire.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you can roll him around on the flames. I
mean, no, he's got the stop and drop part down. He's not rolling very well. That's awful.
That is terrible.
It's awful. I don't really have a problem with, to an extent, of the militarization of the police, but I guess the problem I have is when citizens are not allowed, responsible citizens who, you know, are not allowed, their rights become more and more limited, it seems, in if you look at history's view where the police have become very militarized, eventually it can get to a point where now the citizens are more easily tromped upon, and abuses in the police forces, you know, which I'm not saying that's always the case, it certainly isn't. But let's face it, it's like any field of work, of jobs, people abuse power when they, you know, when certain people get in there. And unfortunately, that just makes it that much easier for that to happen, you know, which is unfortunate. I don't like to bring it all down, but so I think it's unfortunate that as that goes up, the citizens who are responsible and, you know, are not able to kind of keep pace, so to speak. I don't think I need a military Humvee with a 50 cal mounted on it, but
I do.
Well, I do need it, but you know, I
want versus needs.
Yeah.
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 Well, you know what we say when somebody says, you don't need an AR-15, right? You know what we say?
No.
Well, no one needs a whiny little bitch either, but here you are. I'm not saying that to you, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's because he's right there. If he wasn't right there, maybe. Yeah,
and I've taken my knives off, so defenseless. He's closer to my M&P than I am. All right, those questions?
Yeah, I think that's everything. We're going to move on here in the show a little bit. Is Officer Frank sticking with us?
Yeah, first one is for him.
Okay, so we're going to...
He can't leave now. He showed up late. He owes us 30 minutes.
That's basically it, yeah.
All right. So we're going to skip this middle piece here again, are we?
Yep. Maybe next
again,
week.
I've been bumped again. Sorry, folks. I had a great announcement for you this week, but I guess it's not going to happen. So we're going to move on to listener feedback. And this first one comes from Mike. And he says, hey, guys, I heard you were looking for questions to ask Officer Frank. Well, Mike, this is the perfect show for it. We just happen to have Officer Frank here. I'm not sure if this is this question would be better for a lawyer. Could he talk us through the proper and legal way to do a citizen's arrest, both if you do or do not have a firearm? Thanks for the great show. So I don't know what your experience or your knowledge base is on this, Officer Frank, but if you would, if you can respond to him as best you can.
Well, I think, sorry, Frank, but before we do, Matthew, you want to tell him about the website? I mean, Officer Frank, of course, will give his opinion on this, but if he's not aware of this website, we should let him know about it.
Yeah, if you go to the Department of Justice website, which is justice.gc.ca, and then search citizens arrest, everything you need to know pops right up. And
It's entitled read through What You Need to Know About Making a Citizen's Arrest.
You need to read, everybody needs to read this because you never know when you get yourself into a situation that you think, dang it, should I stop that guy or shouldn't I? Well, if you've read this webpage here, you'll know yes or no. And more often than not, it's going to be no. So,
at the very least, if nothing else, you will giggle and chuckle at some of the things.
Some of the things. Yeah. So you should read it for sure.
All right. Take it away, Officer Frank.
Okay. I was, in my younger days, I was I think we call that a floor walker. Like I was working in
not a street walker, bud. Not a street walker.
I was working in let's say in stores like Canadian Tire and stuff like that, arresting shoplifters. So basically I was a citizen. But I was a citizen doing arrest. I was arresting people because they were shoplifters. A big difference is a police officer can arrest on reasonable and probable grounds to believe that you have committed a criminal offense. Where a citizen cannot do that. Basically, I have to know, I have to have seen you, that you've committed a criminal offense.
You have to have the proof right there.
Yeah. You cannot arrest on reasonable and probable grounds.
Yeah, there's a lump in your pocket. I think you just stole that Makita drill. No, that doesn't work. You have to have seen him put it in his pocket.
Exactly. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if your citizen's arrest is going to turn into a physical confrontation and this is not your job, okay? Your job is to show somebody who walked by, who saw someone in the store taking a drill, putting it in his pocket and leaving the store. Well, tell the store manager, get that plate number, call the police. Do not fight with that person.
Wait, you're causing an escalation.
Yeah, if I said, that was my job back then, one of the jobs anyways I had, and I was paid to do it. I never ended up in a fight, but it could have happened. And this was my job, so it's different. But like we arrest the person, we gave them their rights the same way a police officer would do it, and then we called the police, and the police came and dealt with them. They were the one charging them, and we became witness to the offense. So it's very clear cut. If it's going to end up in a fight and you're not a security guard, let that drill go. It's not yours.
But there certainly is. I mean, there's a difference between running out the door and tackling the guy and saying, hey, you come here for a minute. And if he happens to come over then saying, can you sit down for a minute here? We're going to have a little talk.
Yeah.
I saw you do that. You know, you need to stay here.
Exactly.
For a while. you know, you, if you can talk them in and they kind of go, oh, and they're cowed and they give up, then, you know, that's better. Yeah. Clothesline the guy as he goes out the door because he saw him take it. You know, that's probably taking it too far.
Well, I think there's a difference between arresting somebody for petty shoplifting and arresting somebody because you saw them assault somebody. I mean, if you witness somebody beating the crap out of somebody else and you're able to go up to them and say, look, you're under arrest for punching that, you know, that nice lady in the face. You know, I've called the police. They're on their way. Well, if he decides to run, well, it's not your job to hold him. But if he decides to stay, I mean, you've done your duty as a Canadian citizen and you've told him to sit still, stay still, and the police are coming.
If he takes a punch at me,
then you can use reasonable force to defend yourself.
Now I'm going to use reasonable force and I'm probably going to sit on him until the police get there.
That's right. And that is allowed.
If he's unconscious, you don't actually need to sit on him.
That's true. If he is unconscious.
But it's fun, you know.
It's fun. I'm nesting.
The ground is cold, so.
The bottom line here is there is a law that allows and empowers citizens of Canada to legally arrest somebody. And there are provisions for using force if needed and if reasonable. But you need to know what those provisions are. You need to know what those specifics are. Don't go out and start arresting people because now you know you're allowed to. You need to know how to do it. You need to do it the correct way. And the best way to do it is to not do it at all. Let the police handle it, is my opinion.
Yeah, and again, if you move in, let's say, okay, I saw you punch that lady in the face there. I'm citizens. I'm arresting you because you've committed a criminal offense. And buddy starts to run, or you're just allowed to hold him. You're not allowed to punch him to prevent him from running.
No, that's correct. You can use reasonable force to hold him. You cannot attack him.
Exactly.
So the last.
So it says, and if when you try to hold him, then he turns around and he decides to punch you.
Well, now it's self-defense.
Then you're allowed to defend themselves because you're acting rightfully, lawfully, under the
criminal code self-defense section is now going to cover you.
Yeah.
The next part of the question, he says, both if you do or do not have a firearm. So is there a situation where you could legally commit a citizen's arrest with a firearm?
I don't know.
Well, if I point a firearm at you, without just cause, if I'm not defending myself, that's a crime.
You being a citizen.
Yeah.
And me being
a If I saw you hit a lady.
You still can't point a gun at him. You can't point a gun at anybody for any reason.
No, exactly. That's what I was going to say. So you're not allowed to point a gun at anyone.
Right.
So if you point a gun at me, I'm Joe somebody walking in the street. You point a gun at me.
Stop, you're under arrest.
You're going to get charged with pointing a firearm.
That's right. Yeah.
What's the reason? Like, why would you have a firearm anyways?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why you may have one at the time. I mean, it could happen at the gun club.
Yeah.
Maybe you lose your cool at the gun club and, you're about to beat somebody. And, I think you're going to point your firearm at somebody.
Like, I'm not allowed to point my firearm at someone without the justification.
Yeah. Yeah. So pointing your firearm is a crime. So you're not going to get away with it within the context of a citizen's arrest.
And if it happens at the range, leave your firearm in your holster. Leave it on the table, whatever, depending on what the firearm is.
Unless you have to defend your life, it's going to cause an escalation in charges.
Only situation I can see where this would come into play is if you're at home and you've been the victim of a home invasion and you have successfully managed to negotiate all of your safety trigger locks and whatnot and gotten a gun out to defend your life and you happen to catch the guy and he decides to stay of his own volition. Yes, you have a gun, but you can't be pointing it at him. If you have a gun and you need it for self-defense, then you need it for self-defense. That's a completely different area. But I really don't see a good time to use a gun in a citizen's arrest situation. Either they're staying of their own will or you're sitting on them. You're not doing it at gunpoint. You're not the police. You're not allowed to point a gun at somebody. Period. Even
if you need a gun to arrest someone as a citizen,
you're doing
don't arrest them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things have gone sideways.
Yeah. Don't arrest them. Like you shouldn't be doing what you're doing right now because two lives are in danger, yours and his.
Yeah. He may do something that causes you to have to shoot him.
Yeah.
And if you had just let him go.
And if you're not willing to shoot him.
Exactly. No warning shots.
Because it's something big shooting at someone. I've never done it, but it's something big, I'm sure. If you're not willing to shoot and he gets that gun away from you, it's not your gun anymore. It's his now.
Mm-hmm.
So
during MAG 40, the training course I took in Utah.
Oh, did you go to Utah and take a MAG 40, Trevor?
Yeah, I also open carried. Get
you
over it.
You also open carried while you're there. That's amazing. I wish I had heard that before.
So, Masada, you've covered this, and basically his advice was don't hold the suspect at gunpoint. You're not trained to do it, and you're not going to learn to do it in this class. This is armed citizen defense, not armed citizen retain a suspect at gunpoint. He did say, however, if you were in a situation you were doing it, point the gun at the pelvis, because there's a lot of psychological effects going on there. But at the end of the day, Masada Yub's advice was do not hold somebody at gunpoint. If your gun is out, it's because you need to use it to defend your life, not to hold somebody at gunpoint, right? So,
I agree with that, but doesn't holding someone at gunpoint is not the same as having your gun out and maybe having it on you or present is different right. than having it pointed at their pelvis or their head, you know, yeah. to make them stand still.
Yeah, I would say if you're arresting somebody and you have a gun with you, your best bet is to make it safe, keep it pointed in a safe direction, and don't use it in any sort of threatening manner. I mean, if you're out hunting and you witness somebody poaching and you decide that, you know, you saw them do it and you decide you're going to do the citizen's arrest thing and arrest them and wait for the game wardens to get there or the police or whatever, fine. But don't use your gun as a tool. I mean, if you have a gun with you, because you were hunting anyway, whatever, don't use that, though, to intimidate them and to hold them, because now you're going to get charges as well.
Yeah.
And just to come back on the citizen's arrest, if you can identify that person by name, by description, by plate number, by any means, there's no use to arrest them.
That's right.
You guys are going to do it.
Just tell the police who it was, what he did. We'll get a statement, and we'll do our job.
That's good advice.
That's very, very true. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, if you know who it is, let them go. If you don't know who it is, then maybe sit on them.
So now, one, I want to take this just for a minute, if we can spend a few more minutes on this.
Why not? We'll just cut some email out.
I want to go just a little bit farther into procedure. Let's say you are in a situation where that you've had a home invasion, you were attacked, for whatever reason, you used your firearm, the guy decides to cower and hide in the corner because you have a 12-gauge or, you know, you got a KSG or something with 15 rounds of buckshot. And so the guy's cowering in the corner. You're not pointing the gun at him. You're just standing by the door, and you call the cops, and they're on their way. What's the proper procedure to deal with cops showing up and walking in on a situation where, yes, maybe you've identified yourself as the good guy, but you're holding the gun? And I, when I first got into firearms, I was on a lot of American forums, and this was a pretty hot topic, you know, in places.
Take a MAG 40. That
I know
thing,
I,
it's all
I know, but awesome. I haven't taken a MAG 40, and I know how they do it in the States, but I want to hear it from a Canadian perspective.
Well, you mean I show up and
you walk through my door and you see a guy carrying the corner and I'm holding a shotgun. Should I, when you show up in the yard, should I then push my shotgun down? Should I basically hold it safe until you walk through the door and tell me to put it down? You know,
like, every officer will do it differently, I'd say.
Okay.
But some will just shoot you.
I don't want to answer that. I don't want to reply.
Okay.
Because, can I give my opinion on that?
I want to keep my tactics to myself.
Yeah, sure. Good call.
And other officers' tactics to themselves, too.
Yeah. Can I give my opinion on that? My opinion would be if you are in continued fear of your life from that person who's cowering in the corner, if you think that putting that gun down, he will attack you, continue to hold the gun. If you think you can put it down without him attacking you, maybe put it down and in an area where you could get to it quickly once the police get there. You know, when they're here, put the gun down, let them come through so that you're not holding the gun when they come through the door. You can say, my gun is there, I was just using it as self-defense, but there's your suspect.
Yep.
I personally would do everything I can to not be holding a gun when the police show up.
One thing you're all overlooking, right? If he's cowering in the corner, keep your eye on him, back out of the room, go upstairs, secure yourself, and you let him know if he comes upstairs, he'll be an aggressor. He'll be received accordingly. Don't be there. If he's
That's an option
in the corner,
too. Yeah, exactly.
Get back upstairs, lock yourself in your room. You know, police are called or call them. Tell them you're upstairs locked in your bedroom, and last time you saw the guy, he was downstairs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even mention anything about a firearm. I'll have my safe open, ready to as soon as I hear the door open and they identify themselves as police officers, firearms in the safe, and I'm coming down unarmed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get, you need to put some distance between you and that guy cowering. Get
the gun. If the guy's not bleeding out on the floor because you had to shoot him because he attacked you or tried to shoot you.
Yeah,
well, if the guy's bleeding out on the floor, you leave him bleed out on the floor.
Yeah, no, stay that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If that's not the case, then you probably don't need the firearm anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't need the firearm. There's no reason to have it.
Yeah. And if he says, let me go, guess what? Let him go.
Yep.
No, you're staying here. I'm going to keep you here. You know, I'm going to hold my 870 while I'm waiting for the cop. No.
Well, you can put your 870 away and then go sit on him if you like, because we are talking citizen's arrest here, and that thread, that's what we're talking about. So if you want to put your gun away and then sit on him, then fine, you know, whatever. Citizen's arrest. Booyah.
Yeah, just get your wife to take a lot of pictures of him while he's pissing himself.
There you go.
And then let him go.
But don't steal his wallet so you have his ID, because then you'll get charged with pickpocketing. Come on. Be smart about this, people.
Awesome. All right. Good. No, that's okay. No, that's great. All right. So we got to move on to next email.
I think we're going to go ahead and save these emails for next week.
Are we really?
We are running long in our show this
week. Yes, we are.
And we don't need to have a 2-hour episode. Even though we don't have a time limit anymore, we do sort of have to have a little bit of a time limit so we don't go crazy. So yeah, all the email that came in this week is fantastic. We will be keeping it in the show for next week. So tune in to episode 94 to hear your email on the show.
So we'll have to keep Tommy short. He's already short, but we'll have to keep
him short. That's hilarious.
All right. Well, good. So we'll move into the end of the show here. iTunes. Any iTunes reviews this week?
Not a new one this week, no.
All right.
Oh, shout out. I heard Modern Rifleman Radio got a good one.
Oh, yeah?
It wasn't a good one, was it?
Not so much.
Somebody got angry.
Yeah, Ken got angry, rightfully so. This douchebag created an iTunes account just to leave a review and then left.
Oh.
Yeah, somebody didn't like him.
That's not good.
That's the kind of stuff that gets deleted, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Shoutouts. Who has shoutouts?
I got two. One is to Harold. He brought to my attention a file tagging issue. So apparently I've been tagging our MP3 files with the latest tag, and apparently it's not compatible with all devices, so I'm going to roll back to the previous tag if I can. So, Harold, you let me know if I did it right, and anybody else, too. If you're having any problems, technical issues with downloading or listening to the show, please let me know so that we can fix that. So thank you to Harold for that. And also to Faith Lee on the other side of the world, that's Steve Lee's daughter. It's her birthday yesterday, tomorrow, or something, because they're in Australia. It's a different day. We were talking to them earlier. Anyway, it's her birthday. She said I had to give her a shout-out for happy birthday, so there you go, Faith. Happy birthday. I hope it's a great one.
All right. Good. So be sure to check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com for lots of great program podcasts international. And join both of our firearms, National Firearms Association, CSSA and the NFA. And I'm going to use this spot to encourage everyone once again to go print out the NFA petitions, print out the petitions, print out the little sheet of instructions on how to do it. There's a little poster there you can hang up in your window or whatever, and go and get them filled. Check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. We're over 1,000 and counting. Don't know what the exact number is.
1,135.
35. There it is. So it is updated. Excellent.
Yep.
So that's everything for the show this week. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Thank you to Officer Frank for joining us once again.
Very much so. Yes.
Welcome.
And, yeah.
Trevor, take a cop shooting.
Take a cop shooting. But let him know first. Tell him before.
Invite a police officer to the range. How's that?
That's a better way of putting it.
Don't invite a police officer to a shooting.
Right. That's a way better way of putting it. Oh, man. All right.
I struggle with words.
See you later, everyone.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.